Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. We are creeping up on our 100th episode. I just want to say thank you very much for everybody who listens. It means a lot to my team, to me, to the whole SOM TV cast. We love this. Thank you so much. Holidays are coming, and I want to remind everybody, don't be a last-minute gift giver. Shop.somtv.com. We have all sorts of stuff. We have the Blinders game. People are finally starting to get back together. Blinders is a blind tasting competition card game that is, it's really, really fun. We created it based on the first SOM, really so everybody could learn to blind taste and have fun doing it. And so you'll want to pick those up. All three decks are for sale there. We're also going to open up some archives here. I have a limited amount of posters that are from the first SOM release. I am going to sign. Those are going to be available at shop.somtv.com as well. And then here's a big announcement, and very limited. We commissioned the artist that did all the art for SOM Into the Bottle and SOM 3, Brandon Wise. He has done our 2021 SOM TV poster. It is gorgeous. We're only going to do a minimum amount of them, and he's going to sign a number each one. Those are on shop.somtv.com. They will sell out. So if you're looking for something amazing to put in your wine cellar, one of those posters is a great idea. Today's podcast is with Matt Kettman, writer for Wine Enthusiast, and it is just the most fascinating topic. I don't know if you've ever heard about this, but people are aging wines in the ocean underwater. And the reason they're doing this is because the wine might taste better. It might have advanced aging. It might, I don't know, there's all sorts of reasons. But there's also this battle with the Coastal Commission. There's questions as to whether or not it actually does anything for the wine. And so Matt and I are going to dive deep into this ocean aging wine controversy, of which he was part of a big tasting recently. And it is, oh boy, it is just fascinating stuff. One more thing. We have been working on a cooking competition show for quite a long time. This is a brainchild that is, you know, baked into the very first SOM, an incredible cast. It is called Sparklers, and it launches this Tuesday with a double episode premiere on SOM TV. I'm telling you, if you like Top Chef or any great cooking competition show, you will love this cast of characters and love this show. SOMTV.com. All right, everybody. Without further ado, my conversation with Matt Kettman of Wine Enthusiast. Matt, it's great to have you back on the podcast. I know you're really busy, so thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, great. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's this is a really interesting topic to me. I've seen the idea of storing wine underwater several times, you know, traveling through Europe. Before we get into the actual, you know, the event that you attended and all of the tastings you did with this underwater stored wine, what's the reason behind doing this at all?
I mean, I think there's probably two ways to answer that. One is the marketing aspect, right? I mean, you put these bottles underwater. They pick up barnacles. They're down there for a while. They see some fish, I guess. They have a nice story to tell when they come up. You have a nice story to tell your friends when you pour this wine for them. And you know, a lot of wine is marketing. So there's definitely that angle, which is you know, undeniable. There's an interest level there. Whether it's worth 2 to 3 times the bottle that went down, I don't know, but that's not my decision. The other angle that people are trying to kind of explore and tout to some extent is this idea that storing wine underwater makes the wine better in some way, or at least different. There's kind of a lot of, like, I don't know, pseudoscience-y type explanations for this. But to me, I mean, there is a common sense explanation, which is that this wine is going down to a cool, dark place under pressure. There are tides and waves and all the stuff that are causing, you know, some rolling of the wine, a gentle rolling of the wine, presumably, which is not happening on, you know, topside cellars, unless you have some guy running around turning all your bottles, but I don't think that's happening. And so, you know, at that very basic level, you could see that wine that was underwater for a year is going to taste a little bit different than wine that was not underwater for a year. So that's, I think, you know, what these projects are trying to explore.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, so first of all, you know, we should say that we're talking about water that's stored in the ocean. So it's salt water, and it's particularly cold ocean water, not like the Bahamas or something like that. So, I'll try to keep my mean questions out yet, but what does it do? I have not had any wine that is stored underwater. I've seen it for sale many times, and I have always chosen to buy the one that was not stored underwater because of it's $100 less. Okay, what is it actually supposed to do to the wine? I get the rolling. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me because, from my understanding, you don't want to move or disturb a lot of bottles as they age, but maybe that's long-term aging and not short-term.
And I think that has to do with,
what does it do?
You don't want to mess them up when there's oxygen around. But when you're underwater, there's no oxygen around, right? So the whole idea that things might, you know, get oxidative or whatever is not going to happen when they're underwater. I mean, the idea, and from what I kind of sensed from when I've tasted these wines, is that they kind of smooth out the tannins a little bit more. They kind of give, they make the wine slightly more integrated than it was, than it is otherwise. You know, it kind of brings.
So elements. Basically, it's just aging.
It's just aging, but I think that they, the people that are, you know, essentially studying this, kind of describe it in a different way. That's almost like, because that was a question that came up, was like, well, is this just advanced aging? And their response, which I think could be legitimate, is that it sets it on a kind of a different track. Like maybe it's advanced aging, but it's also polishing this stuff that then allows it to go on a different track than the one that's just stored topside, you know, subject to oxygen intrusion and things like that. So, but again, it's only down there for a year. At least these experiments that I've been, you know, privy to, it's only down there for a year. And that's kind of one of my questions. Well, like what happens if it's down there for 2 years? I mean, you feel like it'd be a more pronounced, if there's going to be really an impact, it'd be a pronounced impact. I will say, the wines that I've tasted do taste different. And I would say, and the experts I've tasted them with also agreed that not only different, but slightly better. Whether or not the everyday person can tell the difference is kind of a question. But again, the everyday person is not going to go spend $200, $300, $400 on a bottle of wine anyway. So, and the wines they're putting down there, at least in the Santa Barbara case, are pretty high-end wines anyway. You know, they're top dollar wines. They're not putting down, you know, $2 chuck or whatever. So that would be an interesting experiment too.
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to this, I have a lot of questions. And what I don't want to ask too many before we get into the actual story of the Santa Barbara stuff and who's involved and kind of what the thoughts were on that. But I do want to ask a couple questions. So obviously this wine has a cork in it, correct? It's not
It has screws, a cork in it.
It's not sealed.
It has a cork in it, but it also has a special, you know, wax top that they took a few years to figure out. There was a number of, I think, failures with the top, because seawater is corrosive and wants to get in, especially under pressure, wants to get inside there. So they really had to work on what kind of top is going to work. So, you know, it's a wax top that's specially designed. But yeah, it's closed with cork.
All right, so the question I have is, does it fully stop air from getting in, or in this case, water? Is it fully stopping transmission of saline? And I mean, I know it's corrosive. As a scuba diver, I know the minute you get out, you rinse off your gear, because that next morning, it destroys the cabling. It destroys the wetsuit. I mean, salt is a salt. Anybody who lives in a place where they put salt on the roads knows that it destroys your car. I mean, it's pretty serious.
Yeah, even just living in the saltwater area, your house gets hit with saltwater too. So
right, exactly. So is it totally cut off the transmission? Because that's the whole point.
I mean, it has to be, because otherwise it would be undrinkable, I think. So I think that was some of the earlier failures, was that it wasn't. And then you're getting this wine that has seawater in it. So none of the wines I've tasted have any indication that the ocean has intruded. So I have to assume that the goal is to have them be completely sealed and not allow the water to get in.
Okay. So besides them seeing some fish, these bottles, and you know, having a, and crabs and barnacles and all of these different crusted on animals that join the bottle when it comes up, what's the difference between doing this in a non-oxygen? I mean, couldn't you just take your wine cellar and make it, you know, suck the oxygen out? And just have your bottles aging in a cold room with no oxygen? Would that be, I mean, I guess there's no pressure.
I mean, it's not that sexy, but I guess there might be still some benefit there. I think, you know, this is where it starts to get into some of the claims that I'm not a scientist to verify, but there's talk of like the flow of the ocean and some sort of energy flow going on. And I think this is where you probably start to roll your eyes a little bit, but you know, where there's something with the tidal flow, something with the, there's galvanized, there's some science terms in there that I haven't quite understood. I, on one of these visits I did with this company, like numerous people explained this stuff to me a few times, and I didn't quite fully understand it. But you know, there are some, you know, scientific ish claims related to what's happening down there too.
Scientology.
I haven't really ingested those, because there's so many other like questions and variables in my mind that I kind of just go back to that, you know, the only like common sense explanation that makes any sense to me is the fact that you're underwater, there's some rolling, there's pressure. And then again, I've tasted them and something's going on. It's not the same wine for sure. So I think that there's, you know, people are making these claims, but I also think that no one's entirely sure yet what's going on, which kind of adds to the intrigue a little bit. again, it's a market-driven thing. So are enough people going to be driven by this intrigue to invest in it? I'm not sure. But, you know, I don't know. There's something there. It's not a complete hooey. And the bottles look cool.
Right.
Although they do kind of flake off. And if you have a dog like I do, they apparently smell a little bit because the dog really wants to get its mouth on the bottle. So you have to be careful where you put the bottle. Otherwise, you're going to knock over other things, which almost happened in my house. So
that's a very odd problem. You know, it's like, because a part of me starts thinking of other ways to create this. I mean, obviously, put it in fresh water then, because then you don't have the corrosion.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have that really cool, you know, you don't have the same kind of crustaceans and things that will come and live on the bottle and make it look like a shipwreck bottle.
Yeah. You pull out some leeches.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's what everybody wants is leeches on their wine at a tasting. Okay, so let's talk about what's happening in Santa Barbara and kind of how you got involved with this. What was this event? What's the wine in the bottle? What's the reason?
This was like 4 years ago. I heard a rumor that these guys were putting wine underwater off the coast and et cetera, et cetera. So I actually called one of the guys and had a conversation, which I vaguely recall. And the only reason I looked it up and know it was 4 years ago was because earlier this year, I heard again that this was happening. And this time, an email came to me from this guy, Todd Hahn, who's involved in the project, one of the partners. Nice guy from LA, actually a sports agent in his previous career, maybe same career now. And he, Raj Parr, you know, a Somme that's a friend of both of ours and really well known and well respected.
In all the films, yeah.
Yeah, and he, yeah, the winner of one of your films. He had suggested adding me to this list for this, was called a Sea Cellar Adventure Cruise, which was back in March. And so Todd reached out and I said, hey man, this was ringing a bell, didn't we? Taught and he's like, oh yeah. He's like, I probably reached out a little bit too early because we had to figure out a lot of things before this happening. Anyway, so I agreed to go on this cruise in March. And the idea was to go out on the Channel Cat, which is this, you know, big, huge catamaran, like luxury catamaran in Santa Barbara. You could fit, you know, 100 plus people on it. And I agreed to go out and check it out. And the idea was we were going to go out and they were going to lift the cage of the wine in front of us. But that morning I was dealing with some wine stuff in my garage and it was really windy. And I was thinking, huh, we're going to go out on this boat. If it's windy in the morning in Santa Barbara, typically that means the ocean's going to be pretty rocky. So indeed it was. It was a very rough ride out to the cage. So rough, in fact, that the cage had to be pulled up before we even got out there. So the kind of like the main event, we didn't actually get to see it. And then the ride out there wasn't so bad because we were down current. The ride back was pretty rocky, even on the Channel Cat, which is this like really stable ship. And so there was some puking. There was a lot of pale faces. it was an interesting ride. And then there was also this whole veil of like, you know, this is March and we're kind of in the middle of this COVID surge. And Channel Cat, you can basically be outside most of the time. But if you wanted to drink or if you wanted to actually taste the wine, which they eventually pulled out, you kind of had to go inside and queue up. And I was like pretty cautious at that time. So it was a little bit funny. It was the most people I'd hung out with in quite a long time. So there was a lot of like kind of auxiliary stress happening as we were starting to taste these wines on the way back. It was an interesting excursion.
Yeah, their other property I had a good time at. It was called Firefest. I don't know if you ever went to that. So I guess, and then you guys did a more recent tasting, correct, of these wines?
So I got to taste wines on that trip. We tasted one on the way back, and we got back to the.
What's in the bottle? I should ask. What's in the bottle? Is it red, white?
It's a red. It's a Super Tuscan blend by Section Wines, who the winemaker, Marco Lucchesi, he's actually from Pisa, I believe, originally, but is based here in Santa Barbara. Really nice guy. Makes some solid wines. And the head of this project is actually Italian as well. And so he must know Marco through some means. And so Marco agreed to, you know, give some of his wine for some of these early trials. So that's a Super Tuscan, you know, Sangio with Cab and some other stuff in it. That's actually also one of the wines we later tasted. So this other tasting, basically, so Steve Lopez, the columnist of the LA Times, really renowned guy, wrote a book. There's a movie about one of the books he wrote that he actually has a character in, et cetera. Really renowned guy as far as journalism goes. He found out about this earlier this year while reporting another story and learned that the Coastal Commission wasn't so hot on these guys storing wine in a cage off the coast. Basically, according to the Coastal Commission, they hadn't secured the proper permits. And if you know about the Coastal Commission, they're an extremely cautious and conservative organization when it comes to do with anything off the coast of California. They have an extreme amount of control thanks to the Coastal Act of, I think, 1972, and have done a lot of great things for California. But if you cross them, they're out to get you often. So they basically felt crossed, it seemed like, by Ocean Fathoms, which is the name of this company. And so Steve kind of wrote a story about this in the LA Times. I think it was front page story, you know, about the Coastal Commission's concerns about it. You know, according to Ocean Fathoms, they got permits from like every other agency required, state lands, Army Corps, et cetera. And according to them, the Coastal Commission just like didn't return their calls or something like that. I'm not sure the truth of that or not, but that's what they've said. And so now they're basically, you know, they're essentially shut down. They can't do it right now until they actually get another permit. So anyway, Steve wrote this story and it got a lot of legs. People were really interested, you know, in it. We're talking about it. It's an interesting concept. And so he kind of said, you know what? He was still interested. He still was curious about whether or not these wines tasted different. And so he started to enlist some vintners he knew up in this area, Kathy Joseph from Fiddlehead, Laura Boris from Riverbench, and Peter Stoltman from Stoltman Vineyards. And Peter suggested he add me because I taste, you know, I think more Central Coast wines than anyone on the planet.
For sure.
And so he, you know, Steve said, hey, you want to join this thing? And when Steve Lopez asked you to join a thing, when especially when it's interesting like this and something I could eventually write about, I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I jumped in and a few weeks ago in October of this year, we sat down and tasted these wines.
I should say Steve Lopez, the guy you're talking about, he wrote a book called The Soloist, and Robert Downey Jr. played him in a movie. So this guy's no lightweight.
No.
So what was the outcome of that? So you said that the wines tasted better, tasted different. I know that that's a really hard thing to pinpoint what that means. I have respect for that, but what do you mean?
Right. So I should set up the tasting was a little funny. There was a bunch of people. You know, there was the essentially the five of us, but then there was like. Then there was like 10 other people there, not all for the tasting, but it was like, you know, it seems like this crew like travels with an entourage. And so the entourage was in effect. So we all sat around the table. It was supposed to be blind. That's what Steve wanted. But then the first round was actually poured side by side. And it was actually one of Raj's wines. Raj actually called in on a really shoddy FaceTime link. So Raj was kind of there. And we poured, they poured Raj's Domaine de la Cote Memorius, I think the 2016. So they poured a topside bottle, which actually Todd could only find from Germany for $250. That's like the last one they could find. And then the bottom, the underwater bottle was also poured side by side. And so it wasn't blind at all on that round. But we, you know, we all went around and tasted and kind of jabbered as, you know, wine geeks do. But there seemed to be unanimous appreciation that the wines were indeed different. So to me, the topside wine, the non-underwater wine, was still a little bit more wild, a little funky, a little tart, you know, like a lot of those Domaine de la Cote wines can be kind of wild, which is I like. And then the one that was underwater seemed like some of the kind of more angular edges had been polished off and made to be a bit smoother wine. Again, does that just happen with time? Is this just advanced aging? I don't know. But it was certainly different. And I would say advanced way more than just, you know, a year or two of topside aging. It seemed like it had gone forward quite a bit. And that was essentially agreed upon by everybody there. And then the second wine, then Steve's like, hey, he just kind of turned to me because I was sitting next to him. He's like, this isn't blind tasting, right? And I was like, no, you're right. This is not blind tasting. And so he brought that up. And then the team was like, okay, well, we can do this next one blind, which was a whole different, the way they did that blind tasting was a little confusing too. But anyway, so we all got the wines blind. And this wine was again, that section, that the section wines, Super Tuscan 2016. And we got the topside wine and the underwater wine. And again, these underwater wines are stored for 12 months. That's like their current experimental period is 12 months. And I should say they have, you know, they gave us a tour of the facility before and they have, you know, all of these monitors hooked up to these cages. They've got cameras on them. They're watching things happen. Part of it is for ecological monitoring because they're trying to make sure they're not causing any damage to the ocean as well. So they're watching them the whole time. Anyway, so we tried that one. And again, there was a polish to the underwater wine where I felt that the oak was better integrated. This was a much more oak forward wine, but the underwater wine seemed to have the oak kind of more seamlessly part of, you know, that dark red cherry thing you can get with Sangiovese, whereas the topside wine still had a little bit more of that kind of, you know, angular pointed, you know, wood oil type wood notes. And that's, again, we were kind of all on the same page. No one stood up for the topside wines in either case. So, you know, there's something there. They're different. And we thought they were better. How much better? I don't know. I don't think, you know, the everyday person would even know the difference, but it was a fun experiment.
I'm so curious as to what it is that creates a, what we'll call a different effect. And I think for me, better is a term that really doesn't work in wine, you know, because it's right. a lot of preference driven stuff, but different is a, that's, I'm always after different. That's interesting. I would bet the pressure probably. And like you said, the swaying, the gentle movement of the ocean, probably, you know, some whale comes along and pees on it every once in a while.
The mermaid kisses, I think.
The mermaid kisses, which, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have to think it's pressure. I have to think it's, you know, this movement with lack of oxygen probably has something to do with it. You know, it's dark, you know, very dark. It's much colder, I imagine, than any cellar you're going to have it in, because that's going to be like, you know, 50 degree, low 50s water, I'd assume, which is kind of funny because they also say don't store your fridge in a, or your wine in a refrigerator either. So
I think that's because refrigerators are so dry, right? I mean, yeah. It takes the cork and really mangles it.
Right.
But also, yeah, they do say that that's, I don't know. I mean, you find these shipwreck wines, you know, you get a story that they pulled some old Heidsieck champagne off the bottom of the Black Sea or something and or the Mediterranean, and they drank it and it was in great shape. And
yeah.
So,
but there's a sexiness, you know, to this. I've been at like old wine tastings, and sometimes the wines actually are fantastic. And sometimes they're like, you know, interesting. Like, oh, okay, this is cool. I'm glad I got to taste it, but it's not like I'm going to guzzle this thing. So you always have to, you know, take any sort of aged wine review that you didn't try with a bit of a grain of salt, because people just might be being nice to the fact that it's alive at all, you know, which is a success, or swept
up into the history and the majesty of the fact that, like, you know, somebody made this 140 years ago. It's just cool. It just always will.
And I mean, even though these wines have only been down there for 12 months, there's still some of that magic and mystery involved in these projects. You know, it's obviously not a century old wine, but something's happening, and you know, you can save the bottle when you're done with the two and you have a nice piece for your table.
For your dog to chew on.
Exactly.
Yeah, fantastic. What's the price increase? Are you aware? Do they sell these wines now?
They do. I'm not entirely sure. The only reason I know is because Steve actually bought some wine while he bought a couple of them because he has to buy them. They can't just give it to him because he works for the LA Times and they have pretty rigid and, you know, respectable guidelines as to what you can take from sources. And so he actually bought them himself. And at the end of his story, the one that I was quoted in, he mentions it being $350 a bottle. So that's a lot. Wow. I mean, that section wine is probably $40 on release. The Domaine de la Cote is like $75 on release. The problem with, as you were partially responsible for the Domaine de la Cote, it might be $75 on release, but you can't get your hands on it. So it's going to be on the black market.
Sorry about that. It was not exactly the intention of the film was to sell out all of Raj's wine, though Raj is a really nice guy and I'm more than happy for him. The wine's great too.
Yeah, no, the wine's great. And so the secondary market on those is pretty high anyway.
Yeah, that's a good plug for, hey, everyone, go watch Psalm 3. Yeah,
right.
There's your spoiler. So, you know, I think with this, it's an ongoing thing. There's not like it's here's an end of the story. I'd love to know from the audience, would you guys pay an additional $300 for a bottle that was stored under the ocean for a year or two? I'd be really curious to find out. And I'm sure Matt would too.
Unfortunately, there might be an end of the story. I mean, I'm not sure if the Coastal Commission is going to permit this, you know, the way that I believe that their Ocean Phasm is trying to go through the proper channels to get this permitted. They're doing a bunch of ecological studies themselves, I believe. But, you know, once the Coastal Commission is scorned, it's hard to get them to come around. I mean, they will. They're a public body. They can be, you know, influenced and lobbied and you know, for legitimate reasons. And to me, like,
it doesn't move fast, I bet.
It doesn't move
fast.
It's
a slow process. Yeah.
And to me, if you look at this one project, it's really, the cage is not that big. I think this one project is not really the overriding concern. I mean, we allow so much other, much more disastrous stuff to happen in the ocean on an everyday basis that, like, what's the big danger of throwing a cage down there? It's not really going to, do much. But
can't they just hang them from the oil rigs out there? They've already got permit to put 40 billion tons of metal hanging there anyway. Just put it out with the oil rigs.
And I think that might be like, you know, they might be looking at alternative things too. But I think the Coast Commission is looking at like, look, if we permit this one, we're going to have to permit others. So I think Coast Commission is looking at it more from a precedent setting situation, more so than, you know, this one project that's already kind of pissed them off. So,
well, I'm excited to jump into, we're going to start a project where we age cheese under the ocean.
Yeah.
So nice. The minute I can, I'm going to do Roquefort cheese and things, you know, blue cheese.
Yeah.
Just right, you know, right there in the channel. I'm hoping to build some kind of an underwater station for that.
Sea Brian, yeah. I like the oil rig idea. You know, why not?
Why not? I mean, you already got the oil rigs out there, and, you know, every once in a while, you know, they kill all the animals around them and everyone goes, eh, but they're not going away.
Yeah.
So yeah, hang the cages out there. I remember, you know, when we made the Delicacy, the Sea Urchin Diver film out there off Santa Barbara, you know, we dealt with that commission and we dealt with, not directly with us, but we're dealing with people who do deal with it. And it's, you know, it's a big Byzantine organization with a lot of power. And so
yeah,
I could get this being an issue.
Yeah, I've worked with them. You know, I've done journalism that relates to the Coast Commission countless times over the years. You know, I used to cover environmental issues all the time, and they're one of my go-tos for figuring out what the hell was going on. So, yeah. And there's, you know, they're serious people. They make generally pretty good decisions depending on, you know, some people don't like the decisions, but they are trying to protect the coast. You know, they probably could be a little more flexible with, especially right now when, you know, we're trying to figure out how to use the ocean in ways that are environmentally sustainable. And this one, you know, monetizes the ocean a little bit, gives a little bit more of a business to the waterfront. But, you know, they're worried about, you know, all the copycats that might pop up.
Sure.
But I don't actually think that's a super legitimate fear, because these guys have gone through essentially 4 to 5 years of, you know, technology R&D, development, yeah, to get to where they're at. So we'll see. But their dreams are pretty big. I mean, they don't. Right now, all they can do is take down wines, you know, and sell them directly to people. But they want to do it. They'd like to do it where they have like a big restaurant chain like Mastro's come in and actually, you know, have part of their sellers down there and then sell them back. But to get that approval, the FDA has to sign off on it. And so the FDA is like, well, what are we even testing? So right now, from what I understand, Ocean Fathoms, not only are they dealing with the permitting issue with the Coastal Commission, but they're also having to figure out the tests with which to test them. So it's pretty complex, you know, but at the end of the day, if it doesn't get approved and it doesn't go forward, you know, the few dozen cases that have gone through this process already are going to be worth even more money. I have a one bottle. Would you like to buy it?
Yeah. No, I don't have $300 to buy that bottle. And isn't it empty right now, the bottle you have?
I have an empty one, and I have actually one that was given to us after that cruise that was sent to us. It was actually one of the bottles they pulled up from the ocean before we got out there. And then they clean them up a little bit, you know, get the real crap off them, I guess. And then a few months later, it showed up here. So I do have that bottle, but it's now $1,000 actually. So
I'll pay $1,000. I won't pay $300. So deal.
Okay. Perfect.
Good stuff. You know, one last thing I was just thinking about, you know, in Europe, you know, you can cellar underground. I mean, here in California, you have this problem with earthquakes. And so it is an interesting concept that if there's an earthquake, providing there's not a big tsunami or something, it's a relatively alternative way to store wine. I just wonder, you know, this is 1-2 years. How does it do for 20 years?
Yeah.
You know?
I think, I mean, if they had unlimited resources, these wines would be down there for more than 12 months. But, you know, they only have a certain number of cages, and now they're not even allowed to do it. So we'll see. I mean, they're moving forward like things are going to happen. They're definitely not closing up shop. They are full steam ahead. They're planning even more events, and they're certainly looking for as much publicity as they can get. So they're, you know, they're full steam ahead. It's just going to be, they're obviously in this limbo zone right now. So it's going to be fun to watch for sure.
It's a strange thing to see wine regulated for something other than the alcohol that's in it. That is a bizarre twist of fate.
Right.
Well, Matt, it's a pleasure to have you on. I hope somebody, if you want to seek out one of these underwater stored bottles and you have the money and you want to drink it with me, please invite me if you're a listener. And otherwise, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, it's oceanfathoms.com. You can check it out yourself. They don't put the prices on there. It's one of those ones where you got to send an inquiry to be allowed to buy one.
Well, just email Matt, at Wine Enthusiast or whatever your email is, and just buy his.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, good to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. It's a lot of fun.
We'll catch up more soon. Okay.
Okay, take care.
Love to hear your thoughts on this method of aging wine. Hit us up on Instagram, on Twitter, at SomFilms, at SomTV, at SomTV Streaming. You can find us everywhere. Do not forget, shop.somtv.com. You can get blinders or one of our limited edition posters. I'm signing the Som ones. The artist from Som 2 is signing the yearly 2021 poster, which is extremely limited. All right, everybody, please be safe and have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.